Hello, this is Brian Auten of Apologetics 315. Today's interview is with Larry Taunton. Larry is founder and executive director of the Fixed Point Foundation, a Christian nonprofit dedicated to exploring those ideas shaping culture. The mission of Fixed Point Foundation is to seek innovative ways to defend and proclaim the gospel and to prepare Christians to do the same. The purpose of today's interview is to explore Larry's work with the Fixed Point Foundation, talk about bridging the sacred and the secular, and get Larry's insights from his experience in apologetics. Well, Larry, thanks for joining me for the interview today.
Delighted to be with you, Brian.
Well, Larry, first off, would you mind telling our listeners a bit more about yourself and your background?
Certainly. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, and married, have four wonderful children. And I'm a Christian, of course, and have a keen interest in apologetics. I do an awful lot of writing, radio, and television, where we just simply seek to give something of a Christian perspective on some of the major issues that shape the culture. So I've been doing that for a number of years now and enjoy it very much.
Well, you know, your work has impacted a lot of people, and I'm very familiar with a lot of the things that Fixed Point has done in its resources and some of the debates that it's provided. And I'm sure some people, if they've watched certain debates online, they may not realize that Fixed Point is behind it, but if they hear your voice and they can recognize it, they'll say, hey, this is the moderator of such and such a debate. And so let's start with Fixed Point Foundation. It's more than just a provider of a debate or two online. What is the Fixed Point Foundation and its overall mission and goal?
Sure. I come from an academic background, kind of a minor academic background, I guess you'd say, and I noticed how the academic world was so factionalized that here we're talking about communities that pride themselves, at least in what they say, of being very open and it being a marketplace of ideas. But the reality is there's a real orthodoxy that people are expected to adhere to. And if you deviate from it, there just really isn't much place for dialogue, especially in the university. So Fixed Point Foundation, it is the mission of Fixed Point Foundation to proclaim and defend the gospel. But the way we seek to do that is, as 1 Peter 3:15 would say, with gentleness and respect. I mean, insofar as we're able to do that, and to present a fair dialogue, and to really stimulate believers to equip them to defend their faith. But at the same time, what we also want to do is engage people on the other side. Now, if you think about it for just a second, Brian, in the U.S., and I imagine in the U.K. and in other contexts, there are shows that are very similar to this. Even the television shows that would suggest that they are really about a marketplace of ideas often aren't. You know, it's the kind of thing where we put you in the middle and we shout at you literally and figuratively from the right and from the left, and where there really isn't a sustained development of ideas. So Fixed Point got its start with a few debates, also by doing a few Bible studies, symposia, things of this nature, and they became exceedingly popular. And to your point, you are correct. There are a lot of people who don't realize all that Fixed Point has done. And I compare it a little bit to movie music. Very frequently people will know the music, they just don't know the composer. We find that our work is known around the world. They just are not aware of who it is who composed it.
Well, I hope more people are pointed towards your resources and, you know, many more things that you provide through Fixed Point. And so I want to ask you how you yourself got interested in apologetics and in the long term in defending and proclaiming the gospel. What do you hope to really provide down the line?
Great question. How many of us have ever watched television or been in a university environment or, a kind of presentation where we think, you know, I really wish a Christian perspective, someone representing what I believe, would push back on that just a little bit. I felt that many times watching programs or you know, a variety of listening to radio shows or anything like that, reading the newspaper, thinking there needs to be a robust Christian presence in the marketplace of ideas. My own feeling, my own experience, my own observation is that Christians have repeated the error of the monastic movement, and that is withdrawing into Christian communities and hiding from the world. Now, I can't speak for all Christian contexts, but I come from the southern part of the United States, where there are thousands of large Christian churches, what we might call mega churches, churches that, whose memberships number in the thousands, and where it seems that they are not having the impact that they might have because they've created. I often use the Family Life Center as a little bit of a metaphor for my point. A place where Christians can withdraw into Christian community, where they can exercise, where they can spend time with one another, rather than going out beyond the stained glass and engaging the other side. And so, you know, we've noted that there are many Christians who want to, according to the studies, however, very few Christians have ever shared their faith. And so we seek to produce resources modeling how it is done and pushing back against some of the most vociferous critics of the Christian faith. And so about a decade ago, I went in search of the people who it seemed to me had the harshest things to say about Christianity. We began challenging them to debates. Sometimes I would debate, sometimes I would moderate those debates. You know, what's kind of interesting, Brian, is it sort of started this whole phenomenon of debating. At the time that we were doing it, I don't think anybody was doing it. And in fact, the reaction of many people was to say, well, who wants to hear a couple of pointy-headed intellectuals talking about religion? Well, it turns out quite a few, because rather than drawing, you know, 10 or 20 people, we have packed halls, concert halls, city halls, university auditoriums with thousands of people all over the world, from Sao Paulo, Brazil, to Melbourne, Australia, to the Oxford Museum of Natural History at Oxford University, to Princeton, to you name it, to places like, you know, presumably cultural backwaters like Birmingham, Alabama.
Well, it's amazing. You know, you're talking about all those different locations that you've impacted, and presently you're in France doing work in expanding the Fixed Point Foundation. So can you tell us more about what's in store in that regard as you expand internationally?
That's right. A Fixed Point Foundation is launching a new aspect of our ministry called La Bastide. In fact, I'm standing right now, Brian, on a beautiful spring afternoon here at La Bastide, which is the name of the facility. It's in the 60s. It's sunny, beautiful garden that I'm standing in. La Bastide is the is the name of the property of the house, a very large place, and that it means the fortress. We liked the name, so we decided to keep it, because the way we plan to use La Bastide is to host conferences, events, symposia, maybe a debate or two on the lawn and at this place. But think LaBrie. Francis Schaeffer trained a generation of apologists in a previous generation. We hope to do the same thing at La Bastide. And this place, we're in the process now of getting it up and running so that we can host the kinds of events that we want to host here in Europe, just as we have done in the United States, in an environment that's welcoming and safe, as well as one that really lends itself to the sort of things that we want to do. It will also, just as a footnote, serve as a base of operation for a new ministry that Fixed Point Foundation is starting, which is called Sasha's Hope. Some of your listeners will be familiar with a book that I wrote that was published last year called The Grace Effect. And The Grace Effect has done reasonably well. It's a book that chronicles my engagement, my debates with people like Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins and Peter Singer and those kinds of individuals. And it tells the story of a little girl who is now my adopted daughter, Sasha, and how the theories of academic elites like them played out in her life. She was raised in orphanages that ran off of the accumulated capital, political and intellectual deprivation. And it's been Sasha herself has become really an inspiration for people who want to assist other orphans who came from circumstances like hers. And so Sasha's Hope will really focus on children in Eastern Europe, and it'll operate from La Bastide.
Well, very good there. You know, you mentioned the different debates that you've been in part of, whether debating yourself or, you know, moderating the debates, such as Christopher Hitchens, or we've seen ones with Dinesh D'Souza, Richard Dawkins, John Lennox, and others.
Sure.
And I wonder, in the course of organizing and moderating these events, earlier you mentioned how some people would say, well, who wants to, you know, sit around and listen to that sort of thing? But contrary to that, they do want to listen. They come out in droves. But I want to ask you what you think, what kind of impact that makes, because some people might respond to you saying, well, there was a lot of people that came out, but what good does that actually do? What sort of impact does that make?
I hear a lot
make?
Of that. Mm-hmm.
What
sure.
sort of impact does it make on culture? How does it influence and affect the intellectual sort of environment?
Well, if I may use the example, a historical example, it was precisely these kinds of debates that took place in newspapers and in public that preceded the American Revolution and that preceded the Constitutional Convention that shaped America, you know, I think in terms of the Federalist Papers or something like that. And we might say that the good guys won in that debate. There was another sort of public debate that went on for a couple of decades over the issue of slavery and on whether or not God endorsed it or he didn't. And unfortunately, Northern theologians did a very poor job of making their case and were outmaneuvered by their Southern counterparts, and it led to a war that saw about 600,000 Americans dead. The point is that these kind of public debates matter. They shape thinking. They shape thinking in the academy, and the academy eventually shapes thinking at a popular culture level. I think these things matter a lot. Now, some people would say to me, what difference does it make? I mean, Richard Dawkins isn't going to convert on stage, Larry. Do you really think that's going to happen? No, I don't think that's going to happen. I wish it would. When I debated Christopher Hitchens, I heard the same thing. Do you really think that's going to happen? Well, no. He and I went for a drive through, from his apartment in D.C. to my house in Birmingham, and through the Shenandoah, and I went through the Gospel of John with him, and then through Yellowstone. Did I anticipate a conversion? No. I hoped for it. I prayed for it. But that doesn't mean that those kinds of things aren't helpful and useful. They're very useful. Our Lord, the prophets, the apostles, all debated in the marketplace. And they did so, if not necessarily for the sake of the opponent, for the sake of those who are listening, that they might learn, that their faith might be strengthened, that they might reflect upon what they hear and upon what they see. And so I think these things matter a great deal. I cannot tell you. In fact, just this morning, my staff receives emails off of our website, and they filter those and they forward the relevant ones to me. And I was reading some beautiful emails from people ranging from South Africa to Canada to all parts of Europe who have been touched by some of the resources, by some of the lectures, the CDs, my radio show, or my book, who have been touched and encouraged by those things and strengthened in their faith. People who say, you know, prior to this, I was thinking of abandoning my faith. So I think these things matter an awful lot.
Well, I agree, and I know many of our listeners are thankful for the resources and these debates that VixPoint provided. And in interacting quite a bit with vocal atheists, and you mentioned there the late Christopher Hitchens, I wonder what you've learned from your various interactions with skeptics, with atheists, with non-believers, and maybe lessons you've learned from them personally or things that you'd want other Christians to glean from your experience in that regard.
There are several, Brian. A couple that come to mind is that first, we need to be willing to listen to our critics. Sometimes our critics have some valid complaints, and we don't need to always be immediately dismissive of what our critics have to say. It has been my experience that in our debates, very frequently, even while vehemently defending the gospel and disagreeing with our atheist opponents, we have found that there have been many atheists who have been extremely grateful for our willingness to hear their perspective. I am in the process, Brian, of doing some fascinating research, and this will eventually be published, and I won't go into too much detail, but some of it just involves me listening to atheists. I put out on my Twitter account, Larry Taunton Twitter account. I've put out on my Facebook, or my staff has. I apparently have a Facebook page. I've never seen it, but they tell me that I do. On the VixPoint Foundation website, this sort of thing, that I want to interview atheists. And what you find is that once they started talking, once they realized that my intent toward them was not to make them look bad or to humiliate them or even to argue with them, but just simply to listen. It's quite interesting what I've learned through that. So that's one thing, being willing to listen. Secondly, I want your listeners to hear me very carefully here, because this is somewhat nuanced, and it may sound like I'm now contradicting what I've just said. You have to be willing to find the line and be very discerning in finding the line between building a relationship and compromising the gospel. Now, there are many Christians who are all about defending the faith, and then there are others who are all about gentleness and respect. And that's why 1 Peter 3:15 is so important. Because it's both, and the two of them go in tandem. It's no good to just be hateful and to be coldly logical and to just seek to win arguments. We're seeking to win people, and that means that we can't compromise the gospel for the sake of a relationship with somebody. On the other hand, our defense of the gospel must not always, it does sometimes, but it doesn't always mean that there is an inability of having any kind of relationship. So Christopher Hitchens, for instance, who the two of us somewhat famously, I guess, did a couple of television interviews together, CNN talked to us at length, as did 60 Minutes, about our relationship. How was it that the two of us were able to do these long road trips together, 12 hours from D.C. to Birmingham, and then again through Yellowstone, studying the Gospel of John together? How are we able to do that? I mean, as a 60 Minutes interviewer put it, aren't you an evangelical? I mean, do you know he's an atheist? Which is kind of a funny thing to say. I think the fact that we were able to have a relationship was because I did not compromise the gospel with him. Christopher knew that I really believed what I was saying on stage, but I was also able to communicate to him that while I could disagree with him and say, Christopher, you're wrong, and not only that, I think you're dangerous. But on the other hand, I was able to communicate that I have a genuine concern for his soul. And that became the basis of a relationship. So that's another thing. And then I guess finally I would say this. These guys aren't as big and bad as everybody thinks they are. They just aren't. I remember the first time I sat with Richard Dawkins in his house in Oxford, and I was prepared to just be overwhelmed with this guy who was the poster boy of atheism the world over, and it dawned on me about halfway through our conversation, and I mean this is no insult to Richard, that there was nothing new in anything that he was saying. Nothing at all. And in fact, some of the arguments aren't particularly sophisticated. I think that Christians need to not be so intimidated. It doesn't mean you need to step out and to think yourself an expert on things that in which you're not an expert. You will note in our debates on science, I used Professor John Lennox. I did not use Dinesh D'Souza, and I myself did not debate on that subject. I can do as much damage as good debating on topics that I'm not an authority on. But when it came to history, a bit of philosophy, I felt perfectly able to debate Christopher Hitchens on those points. So, we need to be willing to step out to defend our faith, to be willing to say, I don't know, to be willing to be bruised a bit, and to be willing to lose even. You know, I don't think the Lord demands of us that we always win. He demands of us that we're faithful.
Well, there's some really great, great advice there and good points there, Larry. I wanted to ask you about one thing I found on the Fixed Point website, and that's under the main banner. There's like a tagline reading, Bridging the Sacred and the Secular. So just following on from what we've been talking about and how we are seeking to influence or impact the culture, what does that mean, bridging the sacred and the secular? And can you explain the goal behind it and what it would look like practically worked out?
Well, I'll put it another way. Abraham Kuyper, the 19th century statesman, early 20th century statesman and theologian, put it this way, that there's not a square inch of human existence that Jesus Christ does not look at and say, that's mine. And the point is that, to go back to what I was saying about the Family Life Center and sort of retreating from the world and repeating the error of the monastics, as Christians we need to engage it. We have too readily accepted, and again I speak for an American context more than I do for that in the UK. We've done an awful lot of work in the UK, but I don't put myself forward as an expert on religious the religious climate there. But I like to think of smoking as something like this. I like to think of ministry as something like smoking. It's you've got designated areas where you can do it. Now, if you want to smoke, you go over there and you do it over there. And ministry is like that. There's these ministry designated areas where if you want to pray in your church, fine. You want to go and be religious, you do it privately. That's not Jesus' view of what it means to be a Christian. It's not supposed to be an accessory to our lives. It is to infuse every aspect of our lives. And that means that we have to be willing to take it out into public. And so when we're talking about bridging the sacred and the secular, what we're getting at with that is we're saying we reject the notion of a private faith. A faith that's private is a faith that's irrelevant. What we want to do is take those ideas out into the secular marketplace and to challenge the reigning paradigms. And so we're endeavoring to do that in helping people to bridge their own spiritual lives with the world in which they live in.
Well, very good. I think that helps clarify it. And you know, in following on there about making an impact on culture, I sometimes think maybe Christians would think, well, we'll leave that to the Fixed Point Foundation. They got that covered. They've kind of have got a vision for that. But, it takes some big organization to do that. And so on a an individual Christian might think, well, I can't make a big difference here, but I think that's an error, of course, but how can Christians really make a difference, you know, in their own lives, in their own communities? What does that look like in today's culture? Where would you say that, you know, the individual would begin in their own life?
I'll go back to 1 Peter 3:15, which tells us, always be ready to give answer for the hope that is in you, or give a defense. That word that's translated there as defense or answer in the Greek is apologia. It's where we get our term apologetics. And I like how Peter puts that there, because I'm not asked to give a defense for the hope that is in you, and you're not asked to give a defense for the hope that is in me. Can you tell your story? Can you defend your story? Can you defend how a relationship with Jesus Christ has affected your life? You don't have to be an expert in science, and you don't have to know all the history and all about the documents and their reliability and all those things. It may be that over time you develop some authority and some ability to be conversant upon some of those broader issues. But what I would say is that the average Christian needs to be willing and able to tell their story. It's okay if someone says, ask you a question that you do not feel authoritative on, to say, you know what, I don't know. As one woman put it to me not so long ago, she was telling me she was at a dinner party, and she was asking me, you know, what should I have done? Because this former classmate of mine, who knew me when I wasn't a Christian, asked me all these questions about the reliability of the manuscripts, the biblical manuscripts. He asked me about evolution versus the Genesis account of creation. He asked me about the person of Jesus. And she said, I just sat there going, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. I can put you in touch with people who can answer those questions. And I said, well, what did you finally say? She said, I said to her, all I can tell you, you can ask me these questions all night long, but what I can tell you is that my life is different now than it was 10 years ago. And I said, well, what happened then? What did your dinner companion say? She said, well, she didn't say anything else. And I said, well, you know what? You don't really need my help. Sounds like you did very well. You took it from all the esoteric right into things that are quite personal. And clearly that person did not want to have that kind of conversation. I think she did a brilliant job of defending the hope that is in her, and that's what I would encourage all of your listeners to do.
Well, that's great advice, and you've been giving a lot of good nuggets here, so I might as well go for a few more. And that is a question that I ask many of my guests, and that's advice that you'd want to pass along to the next generation of those who are defending the faith.
That's a very good question. At Six Point Foundation, we do an awful lot of work with high school and college students. And I would say to them that I would hope that that they would be willing, in fact, I'm working on an article on this very topic right now, to go where the Spirit leads them. What we need are men and women who leverage their gifts and their abilities for the sake of the kingdom. And that doesn't always have to be from a pulpit. Certainly we need people of real ability to serve in the pulpits, but we need Christians who go into media, who go into the academy, who go into medicine, who go into science, who go into film, who go into art and literature. That's what we need. Christians who are engaging, who are, as our tagline, as you quite rightly pointed out, bridging the sacred, their Christian faith, with the secular, that is, with the world. And I'm encouraged by many of the thoughtful young people that I am able to engage, both in Birmingham, Alabama, where we are located, and in campuses all over the world where I often speak. And I just would really like to see more of that. If we are to change the world, we will have to change it one heart and one soul at a time.
Well, thanks for that, Larry. And I want to point people to FixPoint and the other resources, debates, and other things that are available at your website. Would you mind pointing our listeners where they might find your resources?
Sure. If you just Google Fixed Point Foundation, that's fixed as in getting the car fixed. Just Google Fixed Point Foundation, or our website is fixed-point.org. That comes from a quotation of Blaise Pascal, who said that we all need a fixed point in morality. And he, of course, was referring to Jesus Christ. And at our website, you will find interviews. You will find something that we call The Fix, which is an RSS feed that you can sign up for. You'll find many of the articles that I write for such outlets as CNN, USA Today, Fox, and so forth. And you can certainly find our shop, which has a lot of the debates and so forth that you've been referencing. So we hope that they'll make good use of those things, and that it will be an encouragement to their faith and challenge the skeptics.
Well, Larry, I'll point people your way, and I'll link to that on today's blog post. I really want to thank you for taking the time to do an interview. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you too, Brian, and best to you.
I've been speaking with Larry Taunton, founder and director of the Fixed Point Foundation. Find more of their resources linked at today's blog post at Apologetics 315. I want to thank those who have been supporting Apologetics 315 through their financial gifts, and also for those who use our Amazon affiliate links located at the right-hand side of apologetics315.com. When you do your normal shopping from Amazon, using those links allows a small portion of your purchase to support what we're doing, and it only costs you a click. Those links can also be bookmarked for ease of use whenever you shop online. We continue to transcribe these interviews with the help of volunteer transcribers and donations. If you'd like to help with more, just email me at interviews@apologetics315.com. We're also still interested in developing an iPhone or Android app for Apologetics 315. However, we're looking for developers or funders for this project, so if you're interested in seeing this project take off, you can contact me at brian@apologetics315.com. If you've enjoyed this interview, please consider sharing it on Facebook or Twitter, which helps get the word out about good apologetics resources. If you have suggestions for the interviews, you can email interviews@apologetics315.com. This is Brian Auten, and thanks again for listening.